A legend is sung of when England was young, and knights were brave and bold. The good king had died, and no one could decide who was rightful heir to the throne. It seemed that the land would be torn by war, or saved by a miracle alone. And that miracle appeared in London town. The sword in the stone.
And below the hilt, in letters of gold, were written these words: Whoso pulleth out this sword of this stone and anvil is rightwise king, born of England. Though many tried for the sword with all their strength, none could move the sword nor stir it. So the miracle had not worked, and England was still without a king. And in time, the marvelous sword was forgotten.
Hello, and welcome to the 33rd episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I'm your host, DFGN Mike, and today I am joined once again by Kevin, Professor Boss K Dog Thompson. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I am doing good.
Yes, and today we will be discussing again in the Disney Animation Spotlight with The Sword in the Stone, one of my favorite films. Even though it's been, like, I don't know, 3 days, 4 days, five, I don't even know how long it's been since we've, because we're, you know, as I've said before, we're kind of ahead of schedule. How are you doing?
I'm doing the same. Let's see. When we're recording this, it's a few days after the New Year's, so, you know, I didn't do anything spectacular for New Year's, but I just kind of went out for dinner with some friends and came back home and watched a very old Dick Clark try to count down from 20.
Mm-hmm.
It was very painful to watch.
Oh, you mean he was at the Rockin' New Year's Eve this year? I didn't even watch it. I thought Seacrest and Daly took over for him.
Yeah, Seacrest was there, but Dick Clark was there too, and Dick Clark did the actual countdown from 20, but he skipped. He went 20, 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 12.
Oh, jeez.
No, he went 14, 13, 11, 10, 11, 9, like... He skipped one, and he repeated one, and I don't know, he was struggling.
Man.
Feel bad for him.
Well, he is old, you know.
Yeah, he is 80 years old, so I'll give him a little slack.
Yeah. Mm. You know, it's new year, you know, new decade, it's 2000, well, okay, well, you wouldn't know this, but somebody on the Earth2.net forums posted a link to how to say this year correctly. It's actually 2010 is how you say it correctly, not 2010, not 2010. And I did that on my Twitter feed at TFG1Mike, and it's pronounced 2010. Because you don't say, like if you say aloud 1810, that's how you say it, 1810. You don't
right.
say 1810.
Right.
So, yeah. yeah, new year, new podcasts, new... Just a whole bunch of new stuff's going to be coming up from Geekcast Radio. I actually, you know, I keep looking at the Tooncast schedule and not really moving stuff around, but just, like, making sure I have everything in a line for the next week's episode and everything else, and holy crap, we're already up to episode 33. It's just flying by. So
come a long way since episode one.
Yeah. With this one, we're going to have a little bit different format. By now, the people would have heard the Disney, because I put in that, you know, on the Disney DVDs, how they have the Disney DVD sound, the da-da-da, you know what I'm talking about?
At
the beginning of each film, where it says Disney DVD. I use that as part of the intro, and then I'll use, if I can find them, I will use the trailers. Well, the Sword and the Stone 45th Anniversary Edition DVD does not have the trailer on it. So I just took the intro where the guy is singing the song and then the line about what's written on the sword. That'll be the intro.
Right.
And then the outro is pretty much the last 5 minutes of the film. I don't know, maybe it's I'm being too lazy. I don't feel like going on YouTube trying to find it or you know, IMDb or wherever. The history lesson. Forgot about that, seeing as how I have to do it this week, seeing as how somebody didn't print out the damn script.
We're too far ahead. We're too far ahead of schedule for me.
I sent you a whole bunch of scripts.
I know, I just didn't print them.
Yeah, see? It's your own damn fault, not mine. You can't blame the schedule.
I didn't want to print 10 scripts at the same time.
Well, you have to print 10, you just have to print the next 3 weeks' worth.
I did, and then I just ran out and haven't been back.
Okay, so, The Sword in the Stone is a 1963 animated fantasy comedy film produced by Walt Disney. Originally released into theaters December 25th, 1963, the 18th animated feature in the Walt Disney Animated Classics. It was the last Disney animated feature released while Walt Disney was alive. Which, again, because we're not doing these ones, these four films, Aladdin, Jungle Book, Sword, and... because we're not doing them in the order that they're supposed to be done in, there's probably going to be some inconsistencies, so... it is part of the English cycle of Disney animated films, which included The Old Man, Three Sons, The King's Daughter, The King, The Golden Goose, Three Daughters, Two Farmers, Pocahontas, and Tarzan. The film is based on the novel of the same name. It first published in 1938 as a single novel. It was the later republished in 1958 as the first book of T.H. White's tetralogy. Wow, that's a really weird word. The Once and Future King. From Merlin's statement, the Times won't come out for another 1,200 years. They can't wait for the London Times. First edition won't be out for at least 1,200 years. It may be extrapolated that the film is set circa AD 558. Going into the general... that's the history lesson. That's done. Going into the general memories, I love this film. It's one of the... It's one of those things where I saw it as a kid, and I didn't really know what the heck it was, but it was just a fun, fun film for me to watch. I mean, this is probably, out of all of the older Disney films, this is probably the one that I can watch the most because it is so much fun for me.
Interesting.
Here's <it's> talk.
I do remember seeing it as a kid, but there's not a lot of parts in this movie that made a big enough impact that I remember them. The one with standing there is, I do remember the scene with Madame Mim and Merlin with their magician.
The Wizard's Duel.
Yeah, their magician duel. I do remember that, and I remember seeing that as a kid, and like when I watched this movie again yesterday, when that scene came up, I'm like, oh, I do remember something from this film, but that's about the only scene that I actually remember from when I was a kid. I do remember thinking as a kid, though, I did not realize this was a Disney film. I actually don't think I realized this was a Disney film until we were setting up and when I was looking through the schedule for Toomcast. I always thought it was some other company that did this film for some reason. I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing, but for me it just didn't feel like any other Disney film. Like, it didn't seem to have that same classic Disney feel to it, so I always thought some other company did it. So it's a new revelation to me that it's actually a Disney film.
When I first saw it, and of course it's pretty much the young version and the magical version of the King Arthur tale of King Arthur becoming king and the sword Excalibur and all that stuff. And I am huge into Arthurian lore. I love most of the stuff. I think, which I still need to get, and my birthday's coming up, so if anybody wants to get this for me for my birthday, I had a copy of it. I don't have it anymore. I want a copy of John Steinbeck's King Arthur and His Noble Knights. It's a really good book, and I really enjoyed I read it, oh God, when I was like 15. I don't know, I found it in some shelter I was at or whatever. this film, when I saw it, everybody knows Merlin. Everybody knows Arthur. They put a fun twist in this with Mad Madam Mim and with, the damn owl. Archimedes.
Yeah, Archimedes.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just so great.
I've always been a huge fan of Arthur, too, and all that type of medieval storylines. I've always loved those, too. I do have to say, don't get mad at me, but I just couldn't get into this film very much. I don't know why, but we'll kind of go through it as we go through. But I don't have the same love for the film as you do, but I do love Arthurian tales.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, we don't always have to agree, and majority of the time we don't.
This will be the first time in a while we're going to have opposing views on this one.
Yeah. Last couple episodes, we've pretty much been in sync for the most part. Actually, I don't have a single thing which it has become known on this show and will always be known on this show that Disney film that shall not be named. I had a bunch of huge problems with that. I have no problems with this film. I could not see anything.
See, and I do. So I think that was my problem. I have like five or six things I'm going to bring up at some point.
All right. That's fine. So I guess we can get into the cast and the voice actors. Again, with most of the older Disney films, it's not going to be anybody that we really recognize. Sebastian Cabot, I recognize, obviously, because we just did the Jungle Book episode last week. He plays the voice of Sir Ector. It's very strange. I never noticed a voice difference in Arthur or Wart, whatever you want to call him, but there was three different people that voiced him.
That explains so much. God, I was going to bring that up. Yeah, I was like, the voice acting of Arthur is driving me nuts. I'm like, it's a teenager at one point, then it's like a 10-year-old, then it's like a 20-year-old. I was like, what is going on with this guy's voice?
Ricky Sorensen, Richard Retherman, and Robert Retherman were the three males that voiced
him. My God, thank you. I was like, this is the worst voice actor ever, but I guess if it's three, I can give it a little slack.
See, if you'd printed out the damn script, you would have known that.
Well, I can give it a little slack then. I'm like, the inconsistency of this voice actor is driving me nuts.
You had Carl Swenson as Merlin. Junius Matthews as Archimedes the Owl, Norman Alden as Sir Kay, Martha Wentworth as Madam Mim and the Old Lady Squirrel, Alan Napier as Sir Pellinore, Thurl Ravenscroft plays Black Bart. Thurl Ravenscroft also did the singing for The Grinch, I believe. Yeah, we just talked about the holiday show, that's right. Barbara Jo Allen as the Scullery Maid, and Ginny Tyler as the Little Girl Squirrel.
Does it give a voice for the narrator?
No, it does not, but I think, I'm trying to think.
I was going
to
say, the narrator was actually one of my favorite voices in the whole movie. I thought he did a pretty darn good job.
I think it was supposed to be a higher octave voice of Ector, Sebastian Cabot. Okay. I don't know, it doesn't, because I just when I got this information, I got it off of the off of Wikipedia, so it doesn't really say.
I would say that my three favorite voice actors in this is whoever does the narrator, and then probably Archimedes and Madam Mim.
Yeah,
I think they do some excellent. I mean, obviously Merlin's good and he has a ton of dialogue, but I really like Archimedes' voice acting in Madam Mim's.
Yeah. You know, everybody can pretty much. I think everybody can relate to Arthur or Wart or whatever the hell you want to call him
mm-hmm.
in this, because every young boy was picked on by an older, you know, who had older brothers or schoolyard bullies, was picked on them, like with what Cade does to Arthur in the film, and just, you know, he's not my favorite character in this, but he's not the worst character in this by far.
Who's your favorite and your least favorite?
Most favorite probably would be, it's a tie between Merlin and Archimedes, because their interaction is just great between the two of them.
Yeah, my favorite would be Archimedes by far. I just really like what he did, except for the one scene where he was laughing uncontrollably. That got kind of old, but other than that, I really like Archimedes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think here. I think the worst one is probably Circe.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't like the character. It's not really the voice that I don't like, it's just the character. I just cannot stand it. He's a doofus. You know, if you put, you take Oswald out of Drew Carey and put him in this, that's what Sir Kay is. He's just some scatterbrained goofball who, his father wants the best for him, and then of course, you know, he's like, oh, you can get the crown, Kay, you can be king. He's like, yes I can. You know, just had like real arrogance about him.
Yeah.
And just, no. He's
a kid. He's a kid that nobody liked in school. Somehow popular, but nobody liked him.
Yeah, exactly. So who's your worst?
It's kind of tough for me to say. I probably, at times, it's actually Arthur. Even though I can relate to him and I understand, like, who he is and all that, at times I just want to slap him upside the head. but I'd probably go with you with one of either Circe or his father, Hector, just because of the way their characters are. I mean, I know it's intentional, but they just have kind of douchebag characters.
Yeah. I mean, I like the voice of Sir Ector, but I didn't even know until I looked at the script a little bit earlier. I didn't even know it was Sebastian Cabot when I was watching the film until I actually saw the credit in the beginning of it. I was like, oh well, that's Bagheera. going into the behind the scenes segment here, you know, we all know that people use recycle animation. Just a fact of the time. The deer Kay tries shooting at with his arrow was copied from Bambi's mother, from Bambi. When Sir Ector and Kay are in the kitchen fighting against the enchanted dishware, Sir Ector swings his sword backwards and hits Kay on the head. Jasper and Horace in 101 Dalmatians are animated in the same way during the fight scene with Pongo and Perdita. Also, footage where Wart is affectionately licked by the two castle dogs is reused in The Jungle Book 4 years later. The scene where Arthur is squirrel jumping from one tree to the next was reused in The Fox and the Hound in 1981. When Wart goes into the forest to retrieve Kay's arrow, he pushes aside a branch and weaves in and out a few small trees. The animation was reused in Black Cauldron. Directed by Wolfgang Reitherman, writing credits is Bill Peet, and of course the book was done by T.H. White. I guess we can go into the actual plot, actual show. does it ever say, I'm just kind of looking over the script here, or just looking over the plot. It says, the film begins in England with the death of the king, Uther Pendragon. I don't ever remember... And I just watched this last night. I don't remember that. Did they say it was King Uther?
I remember they said saying something about the king dying, but I don't remember
if they said
him saying name.
Yeah. Right. So how are we gonna do a 5-second synopsis of this one?
I can get this one pretty well.
Okay.
All right, so you have, here goes, 5 seconds of Sword in the Stone. Yeah, Arthur Fallon, Sir, what's his name again?
Sir Kay.
Sir Kay,
yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, he's hunting in the forest, or in the, wherever you want to call it. Arthur messes him up, the arrow goes into the forest. So Arthur goes after it, ends up finding, crashing through the ceiling of Merlin's little hut, Merlin and Archimedes' owl. Merlin convinces him basically to let him go back to the castle. So they go back to the castle. The whole time here we have Sir Kay and his father preparing for a trip to London where he's going to become the king because they're going to have some tournament to declare the king because they've given up on anyone ever pulling the sword out of the stone. Meanwhile, while Sir Kay is training, we have Merlin also training Arthur in different little moral, ethical lessons and stuff like that, character building, which include him being turned into a squirrel, being turned into a fish, being turned into a bird. I think I got them all. And learning different little valuable lessons through that. Eventually, we go to... Skipping ahead a little bit. We have Merlin and Sir Miss Madam Mim have a little showdown in between before Arthur actually ends up in London. Forgets Sir Kay's sword, so he goes to look for his other looks for a sword to give him, finds the Sword in the Stone, pulls it out, takes it to Sir Kay. They don't believe him, so they go back and he has to pull it out again, which he does. He becomes king, and we all live happily ever after.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'll cut some stuff out, but...
No.
You have to leave stuff out in 5 seconds.
I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, I didn't really care for the... the fish scene is funny, but I don't know. I've never really been a fan of underwater scenes in any kind of medium, whether it be live-action film or animation, for the most part. I think the only one that I can really, really say that I kind of like it is... in the Justice League episode, the Enemy Below, which is has to deal with Aquaman and all that stuff, and of course that crosses over into the Secret Origins podcast, which is coming in February. Shameless plug there. But
I didn't mind the fish one as much as I minded the squirrel one. The squirrel one drove me nuts. I'm like, what is the point of this nonsense? And then you're going to break this poor little girl squirrel's heart. Just a bastard.
Well, if she wouldn't get so attached to him right away, you know.
I'm trying to figure out what the moral lesson that a kid was supposed to take away from that. Guy, girl, do it. Whenever there's a guy and a girl together, go at it.
God. Wow. Okay then.
And then guy, do your typical thing and leave the girl high and dry so you can break her heart. That's the moral learned from that little episode. Anyway.
I like the reaction.
That's not the things I had a problem with, actually.
Okay, well, hang on. One thing I did like about that scene is the old lady squirrel's reaction to Merlin when he says, Madam Poof, and he turns into himself. She's just more pissed. Alright, so what are your issues with the film?
Alright. Since we're talking about the actual show, I'll start with the first thing that caught me. There's a scene in the beginning with Merlin inside his little hut when Arthur or Wart is there, and they made Merlin smoke a pipe.
Okay.
Which, I understand that he's a magician and he can do all kinds of crazy stuff, but there was no need to have him smoking a pipe. Like, it would have been fine without him doing that, and I'm so anti-smoking that whenever I see you smoking and like a kid thing, it bugs me.
Okay.
So, I know that's minor, but that was one thing. And then in the same scene, they have Arthur sitting down with Merlin to drink some tea. I don't know many 10-year-olds to drink tea.
Well, you gotta remember, though, this is mainly based off of an English thing.
Yeah, that's true.
American, so...
neither one of those I have that big a problem. I have more of a problem with the pipe than the whole tea thing. And then when Merlin is in the, I think it's called the South Tower or the North Tower, whatever it is in the castle,
right.
The one that's real wobbly and looks like it could fall at any time.
Yeah.
The first time he's there, it's raining, and the rain is falling through holes and onto Archimedes and Merlin and whatnot. And it shows him putting some little umbrellas through the holes to try to, you know, plug the holes.
Mm-hmm.
Merlin's a freaking magician. Why can't he just plug the holes? Why can't he just cast a spell and have it sealed up without raining on him?
Because
that bugs me.
Okay, and I can see that, but
he can turn himself into a freaking fish.
I know.
Come on.
But it wouldn't serve the purpose of him getting. It wouldn't further the plot if he did that, though, because the plot of that scene is he has to get Archimedes down there to see what the big news is. So...
yeah, bug me. Like, I know you can do this. You know you can do this. Just make it plugged up. Let's see. Oh, and then another one is when he's talking about what he plans to do with Arthur and to get him, you know, to become king or to become something, you know, special or whatever. I don't remember the exact phrase, but I think he's talking to Archimedes and he says, I don't know if Archimedes asked him how he plans to do it, and he says, well, I plan to cheat if necessary.
Oh, no. What it is, he says, Archimedes asked him, how do you plan to do this? The boy's only 12 years old, and I don't know, is something, and he goes, you know, well, I plan to cheat, of course, use magic, every last trick in the book.
Yeah. I just wish they would have said, I plan to, you know, I'll use magic or every trick in the book or whatever. It just caught me, like, this is the guy that's supposed to be teaching the moral lessons to the kid, and he's like, I'm going to cheat. It's like, if you're watching that, is that telling you that it's okay to cheat and it's okay to smoke a pipe? No, I'm just kidding. I know I'm being very nitpicky, and that really had no bearing on whether I liked the movie or not. It's just like little things that bugged me while I watched it.
No, look at all the nitpicks we did with that movie that shall not be named on this show. So I mean, you know,
yeah.
That's fine.
And I got one final one, which is at the end. When they put the sword back in the stone, and before they let Arthur pull it out again, Sir Kay says, oh, I'll pull it out first, because now that it's been done, you know, it can be done again. And he grabs the handle of the sword, and he starts pulling on it. And then his dad tries to help and grabs the blade part of the sword.
Yeah, his hand would have been sliced up.
I'm like, ouch! And then everybody else starts grabbing it, chewing up. I'm like, ow, a lot of cut hands. I'm like, you guys are not very smart, you know. So there's just little things like that that kind of bugged me. It didn't have anything to do with the overall story, or you know, I don't really have a problem with the plot of the story. I don't really have a problem with the characters of the story. There's just like little tiny things that I'm like, that's stupid. Or that doesn't make sense. So
yeah, exactly.
That's my nitpick.
So I guess we can move into the music segment here.
I gotta redeem myself by saying that I'm actually curious on your hand too, but I don't wanna make it seem like I'm completely negative. I do have a couple parts that I really like.
Okay.
And the two parts I like the most probably in the whole movie, and I'm thinking I should have an Archimedes scene in there, but I don't. But the two parts I like the best are having to deal with Merlin's magic.
Yeah.
One, when the kitchen is cleaning itself. But even more than that, I really like the scene where he gets everything in his whole hut into his one suitcase.
Oh, yeah, the hickety-pickety-puckety.
I like the two scenes with Merlin's magic. I mean, I'm sure there's little Archimedes moments that I probably like even better, but I really like when Merlin's magic actually worked like that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. For me, I'm trying to think now. Of course, the Wizard's Duel is really cool. I really like that.
He turns into the little inchworm or whatever, caterpillar.
The little caterpillar. I think I like the mouse and the elephant the best, though. That's so funny.
Sure. They did that well, too.
Yeah. You know, I'm not really sure at this point. I think I'll agree with you on the packing scene. Yeah.
It's a fun scene.
Oh, yeah. So, going into the music, didn't actually figure, I mean, it's probably in the credits somewhere, but just talks about the songs, who they were sung by. The Sword in the Stone is sung by Fred Darien. Higgidus Figgidus is sung by Merlin. That's What Makes the World Go Round is sung mainly by Merlin, but Arthur does do part of it. Not all of it, but part of it. Most of the Fuddling Thing, which is the squirrel scene, sung by Merlin. And then Mad Madam Mim, which is sung by Mim. Blue Oak Tree, I believe, is that the outro? Because I don't remember. It doesn't list who it's sung by.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Overall, great music for the film, I think. I like the part of the Sword in the Stone theme where it's using trumpets, where it's dun-da-da-da-da-da. I really like that. Really don't have a problem with any of the music in this.
See, I think this is where the film becomes negative for me, because I just didn't like any of the songs in the whole film. I don't know why, but especially when you're used to some of the other Disney movies that just have awesome, awesome songs, none of these songs were awesome to me. I mean, some of them were fun and they were, you know, simple, but none of them were, they almost weren't even songs. Like, they were almost like speaking songs.
Yeah,
like, especially.
Yeah, it's plot point. They basically use song in this as a plot device. Basically, you know, take the Matrix out of Transformers and you don't have a plot device. They're okay.
There was nothing that was just like majorly vocal that was like impressive from a vocal standpoint, and even, I don't know, besides even some of the wording, like some of the lyrics, I don't know, I'm just not a big fan of the music of this movie.
No, I mean, it's not the best at all, I will agree to that, but it's not the worst. I mean, you know.
No, not the worst. I wouldn't say it's the worst. I think that's my sum up of this movie. Like, it's not the worst. Nothing about it is the worst. The characters aren't the worst. The voice acting's not the worst. The songs aren't the worst. But none of it's the best for me either. Like, it's just okay.
Yeah. See, I have a more, you know, and it really has nothing to do with this. It has to do with the film overall. Unlike you, I'm more attached to it because I saw it so much when I was a kid. I would make my mom rent this all the time. There were three films when I was a kid that I would rent constantly: Transformers movie, The Secret of the Sword, and this. So go.
Wait, say that again. Secret of the Sword. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, the He-Man She-Ra movie.
Yeah.
So. Going into the legacy segment, the film was a financial success at the box office and was the sixth highest grossing film of 1963. I almost said 1936. It was better received by British critics than American critics, who thought it had too much humor and a thin narrative. As of 2009, Rotten Tomatoes reported that 71% of critics gave positive reviews based on 21 reviews with an average score of 6 out of 10. If I was going for objective, I would say 7 out of 10. If I was going for just pure fan base, I would say 9 out of 10, but that's just me. In his book, The Disney, Neil Sinyard states that despite being not well known, the film has an excellent animation and complex structure, and is actually more philosophical, there we go, than other Disney features. Sinyard suggests that Walt Disney may have seen something of himself in Merlin, and that Mim, who hates the wholesome sunshine, may have represented critics. I don't know about that, but could be. The film received an Academy Award nomination for Best Score Adaptation or Treatment in 1963, but lost against Irma La Douce. I don't know what the hell that is. Again, thank God I wasn't born in the 60s. For the theatrical and home media releases, the film was originally released on December 25th, 1963. It was then followed with reissues in the United States on December 22nd, 1972, and March 25th, 1983, with Winnie the Pooh and A Day for Eeyore. As far as the home media, the film was first released on VHS format for the UK in 1983 and the US in March 1986, followed by another VHS release in July 1991. Both of these were in the Walt Disney Classics line. The VHS was released again on October 28, 1994 as part of the Walt Disney Masterpiece Collection. The VHS was then re-released along with the DVD release of the film in March 2001 as part of the Walt Disney Gold Classic Collection. The 45th anniversary edition of the DVD was released in June 2008. The deluxe edition of this was also, which included lithographs, a book, a lenticular card, and a certificate of authenticity, was also released in June of 2008. Unfortunately, I only have just the 45th single disc edition. I've seen pictures of the deluxe special edition, and it comes in like this giant tin, silver embossed tin. It looks really cool. I would like to get it, but I'm happy just having the film itself. It's not something that's like high on my list at this point. And finally, before we go into final thoughts and the closing, we have video games. Merlin appears as a character in the PlayStation 2 game Kingdom Hearts, where he helped the characters learn magic, as well as its sequel, Kingdom Hearts 2. Overall, you know, just going into final thoughts, just really, really great film. For me, anyway. I mean, I know that you have some issues with it, but it's one of those things where it's part of my childhood. I always remember watching this for some odd reason. And I watch it always, like, it's not like something I can watch every day, and it wasn't something I watched every day, but I remember watching this movie a lot when I was a kid.
I think for me, I don't know. Like I had told like the music, and even though I like some of the characters and some of the stuff, I would put just looking at the last two films we talked about, Jungle Book and Aladdin, you could go down like five or six characters in those movies, and I would like my sixth favorite character in Aladdin would be my favorite character in this movie. Like, none of the characters were that, like, they just didn't grab me like a lot of characters in other Disney movies. And like I said before, it's not that it's a bad movie, it's not that it has a bad plot or anything like that, it's not that the characters or the voice acting's that bad. It's just, to me, it wasn't a Disney movie to me. It just didn't have that Disney feel or that Disney magic. It is what it is, and I watched it, and I didn't hate it. Like, I made it all the way through it, and it's not like I wanted to shut it off or anything like that. And it's definitely not anything like the Disney movie that shall remain nameless. But if I was giving it a ranking out of 10, it would probably be like a 4 or 5 at the most for me.
And that's fine. I mean, you know, to each their own. And again, you didn't have the childhood connection to this because
right.
I watched there was a lot of Disney films that I watched as a kid. A lot of the older ones, you know, as I've said in previous Disney episodes that we've done, you know, I always thought they were releasing as I was growing up in the 80s. Of course not.
And we will have a Disney film coming up where I probably have the same love for it as a kid that you do with this one. So we'll see when we get to that one if you like it or not. But there is one on the schedule where not a lot of people necessarily love it as like a Disney classic, but it was one where I watched over and over and over as a kid. So it'll be interesting to see when we get to that one.
And I am going to put the call out right now before we go into the outro. Oliver and Company, which is the next episode of Tooncast, is the final Disney film that we'll talk about in this portion of the spotlight. The Disney Animation Spotlight will come back at a later date. We have other things we need to discuss. I think four Disney films in the last 4 weeks. Well, we haven't talked about Oliver and Company yet, but, you know, that's enough for now.
We need a break, and we need to go back to some cartoon.
We're putting the Disney Animation Spotlight back in the vault, ladies and gentlemen. It's a horrible...
We're being too Disney.
It's a horrible, horrible analogy, but it's the only I can think of. But I'm going to put the call out right now. I need to find... Anybody can find this that has internet connection can email me at tfg1podcast@gmail.com. I need to find the songs from the Oliver and Company soundtrack. Why Should I Worry? Just pretty much all of the famous songs from that soundtrack. At this point in time, I can't afford to buy the thing, or I would go out and I'd go on Amazon and find it. So if anyone wants to send me MP3s of all of the songs or somewhere where I could download them for free, not saying that's a right or a wrong thing, but, you know, just at this current time, I can't, I don't have the monetary means to buy the soundtrack, and I need them by, I need these by next Tuesday, which is the, what is it, the 5th. Anyway, I was just trying to think, because, yeah, anyway, so going into the closing here, thank you for joining us here on TuneCast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. The first is you can leave, or you can visit www.geekcastradio.com. Find all the other GCR and podcasts there. The second is you can stop by predaconempire.com/nexus. Those are our new forums. The third is you can leave the show feedback on iTunes. Yes, please do this. The fourth is that you can visit another great geek culture website, www.earth-2.net. And in their forums, you can find our threads for the shows in the self-promotion section. The fifth is the email address, which is gcrntunecast@gmail.com. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say which show you're leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. You can also follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCRNTuneCast. Mine is TFG1Mike, and what is your Twitter?
BossKDog, B-A-W-G.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of TuneCast. We wish you'll join us next time, when we will finish this part of the Disney Animation Spotlight with Oliver and Company. For now, I am TFG1Mike with...
Professor BossKDog.
Saying the immortal words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out, and thank you for listening. Until next time.
Podcast good!
There once was a boy, an albino, I'm told, who possessed the power of pen pusher gold. He had many stories, all short and exciting, but nobody knew, and so he began writing. He sat there all summer and skillfully sought to perfectly ponder and polish each plot. The settings were set, all the characters cast, his fingers were flying and flailing so fast, and soon the young man with the snowy complexion quickly concocted the caffeine collection. He smiled, satisfied with his clever creation. Oh, the things that did pour from his imagination. Stories of pirates and future police, of devils and bullies, and a twist press release. Fantasy, mystery, both are included. Comedy, action, no genre excluded. You say to yourself, it's too good to be true, but author Steve Saylor would not lie to you. An audiobook, so you don't have to read. And hey, $15 is all that you need.
From the author of the podcast novel, Black Shadow, Steve Saylor presents The Caffeine Collection, a dynamic audiobook collection of short stories presented by RingtoneFeeder.com and SteveSaylor.net. Steve presents a genre mashup of multiple stories for your ears.
I have to be on caffeine to write all this.
Steve Saylor presents The Caffeine Collection on sale October 28th, 2009.
So mark this day down so you will not forget. For more information, SteveSaylor.net.
Soon it will be a new year, a new decade, and that means a new Transformers Review podcast from the minds that brought you the TFG1 podcast and all things Transformers. Coming January 11th, 2010 is the Beast Unleashed podcast. This will feature Steve Megatron, Pecan Court Michael, and TFG1 Mike. 30 pulse-pounding, discussion-filled episodes covering both Beast Wars and Beast Machines. This is the first ever
Beast Wars Review Podcast. So unleash the beast in you. You can find us on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. The TFG1 Podcast has 24 action-packed discussion episodes on the original Transformers cartoon. So if you're a fan of the 80s cartoon, we have all you need and more, as well as an interview with Stan Bush. You can find us on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Tune in. ToyCast is all new as we have transformed and transcended from just being Transformers ToyCast into ToyCast. We'll talk about any toy line from any generation, even Rock'em Sock'em Robots. You can find us on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Start being a kid again and keep collecting those toys. Moo-ha-ha-ha-ha.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of ToonCast coming this week.
All right, boy. Let's have the miracle.
Now, wait a minute. Anyone can pull it once it's been pulled.
You...
Go to it, Kay. Give it all you got. Put your feet in it.
Push him, I say.
I turn you one side.
This. That's not fair.
I say we let the boy try it.
That's what I say. Give the boy a chance.
Go ahead, son.
It's a miracle ordained by heaven. This boy is our king.
Well, by Jove.
What's the lad's name?
What? Arthur.
Hail, King Arthur!
Hail, King Arthur! Long live the king!
I can't believe it!
Oh, forgive me, son. Forgive me.
Oh, please don't, sir.
Kay, bow down to your king.
So at last the miracle had come to pass in that far-off time upon New Year's Day, and the glorious reign of King Arthur was begun.
I can't be a king, Archimedes. I don't know anything about ruling a country.
I told you to leave the thing in the stone, boy.
I'll run away. That's what I'll do. They'll just have to get somebody else.
Better take the side door, Wart. Out the side door.
Hail, King Arthur!
There's another door. Over there. Over there. Come on. Come on.
Long live King Arthur!
Looks like we're surrounded, boy.
Oh, Archimedes, I wish Merlin was here.
Merlin! Merlin!
Oh, Merlin, you're back from
Bermuda? Yes, back from Bermuda and the 20th century. And believe me, you can have it. One big modern mess. Alakazam!
I'm in an awful pickle. I'm king.
Ooh, he pulled a sword from the stone.
Ha ha! Of course, of course. King Arthur and his knights of the Round Table.
Round Table?
Oh, would you rather have a square one?
Oh, no. Round will be fine.
Boy, 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 you'll become a great legend. They'll be writing books about you for centuries to come. Why, they might even make a motion picture about you.
Motion picture?
Oh. That's something like television. Without commercials.